Yes, don't turn the station. Don't be surprised. It is me. I am back. It is Jeremy Roenick, and I'm back on Snipes and Stripes on NoFilter.net with my great friend and my buddy Tim Peel on a day that I'm very thankful for being here. Tim, it's been 6 weeks. You've held down the fort. You have been the best partner of all time. I can't thank you enough for being that great partner. But it's great to be back on the show, and I'm bigger and better than ever. Not bigger in terms of my size. I've actually lost 15 pounds, but my brain and my heart are bigger than ever. It's good to be with you, buddy. How are you?
I can tell you've lost weight. You look fantastic, buddy. It's so good to see you. You know, we missed you like crazy. The fans missed you like crazy. Everybody, you know, who shot JR? Where's JR? What's going on? I love you. I'm glad that this journey that you went through, I can tell you're doing very well, and I'm proud of you, and I'm excited to talk playoffs. I've missed talking playoffs with you, buddy. The playoffs have been unbelievable.
I hear that. Well, you know, just for fairness of everybody, I needed to get away and reevaluate my life and reevaluate the way I think about things. Reevaluate the way I look at life and the way I live life. And I wasn't being fair to myself. I wasn't being fair to members of my family, not even my friends. And I needed some time just to kind of recoup and reevaluate and then restructure, which I have done. And I everybody says, did you find God? And it's like, not that I found God, but I definitely found a spirituality and a higher power in myself that is really excited about the next phase of my life. And, you know, I unfortunately was in a place where I had no phones, no computers, very minimal television, and very minimal radio. So my ability to follow these playoffs has been very scarce. I've been able to look at the scores and see who's winning and see who's moving on. And we'll talk about Toronto again, choking against the Boston Bruins, which was, I heard you gave a nice little bolt jolt to the Toronto Maple Leaf fans, which I can't wait to hear about. But again, I don't know much what's going on, but I know enough to where I can give a lot of good feedback on this podcast. So I'm excited about it.
Well, you know what? One thing before we move on, I got to be honest, I'm a little jealous, and I'm sure a lot of people are. I think everybody could use a little reset every once in a while in their lives, buddy. And that's the reality. We live in a crazy world right now, and with just the world we're in, and social media, and just life in general, it's not like it was when you and I were growing up. Things are a lot different.
Yep.
A little reset every once in a while wouldn't be a bad thing. But before we get into hockey, I want to thank our sponsors. I'll let you touch on your whiskey in a second. Thank you to Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. Thank you very much to Bet Online, and also to Protected Neck Guards. JR, we're killing it.
Nice.
Talk to one of your guys you probably played with the other day, Brian Rolston, yesterday. He wants us to hook him up with Little Caesars. All kinds of guys. So Protected, shout out to Protected, and I'll let you touch on Whiskey in the Wild.
Yeah, Whiskey in the Wild. Get your best chocolate and chocolate orange whiskey, whiskeyinthewild.com. It is my favorite spirit in the world. Obviously, I'm very envious and I am biased, but I will guarantee you it'll be the best drinking experience you can ever have. Whiskey in the Wild, whiskeyinthewild.com, and I continue to build that business. We're doing great, and I'm hoping that it becomes a household favorite in every single person's household, that at least that drinks. So, which I haven't done in 7 weeks, but I will find one this weekend and enjoy that.
Good.
so where do you want to start on this array of playoffs that are going on? I know we have suspensions. We have guys that can't play anymore because of certain rules restrictions. We have injuries. We have controversy. We have like big losses that have happened in the first round. Where do you want to start first?
You know what? I sent a tweet out last night, or this morning. I said, I think the second round, JR, you're coming in at a perfect time because we've got a bunch of game sixes, and I'm sure we'll have game sevens. This second round has been the best playoff second round that I can remember in a few years. And the reason I think is, if I don't want to, it's not a shot against Boston, but if you take Boston out of the equation, I think you've got seven teams remaining that any seven of them could win the Stanley Cup. I really believe that. Like, all of them have a very good opportunity to win. Let's touch on the games last night before we get
into Well, let me ask you this, though. You say Boston doesn't have one of those chances because you think they're playing Florida. But do you think that they deserve to be one of the last final eight teams that are in this position?
Absolutely. And you know, when I say that, I because I love Boston. I love Monty. I love Patty.
Yeah.
All the guys there. It's not, I'm not taking a shot at them. I'm just saying I don't think they're as talented. That doesn't mean they're not going to win, because Will sometimes wins over talent. Will wins over skill sometimes. Florida's just really deep. And if it wasn't for Jeremy Swayman last night, then we might be talking about how this series ended in five games. But that's the great thing about sports. That's, as you know, that's the great thing about hockey. You get a hot goalie. We saw it in 2019 with Jordan Binnington. Swayman right now is in his zone. Bobrovsky's playing well. The goaltending last night on both ends of the ice was phenomenal. Do I think we're going to go to a game seven? Yeah, you know what? We might.
Yeah, and controversy also, right? Because we say Marchand going down with an injury, and the Sam Bennett thing, I did get a glimpse of it and did watch it, and it was very, very very hard to see what really happened in that play. I think Boston has a very good claim of a cheap shot that Sam Bennett gave Marchand. And although you couldn't see it from the back, that quick little right-hand jab that Bennett gave Marchand was enough to knock him down and, again, force another hit to his head, which I think they got away with one on that one. And that severely hurt Boston's opportunity and chance, but they did sneak one out because of goaltending. But can they do that again in game six? Boston wants to return the favor for what Florida did last year in the same kind of situation. It's not to say that they can't, but if Marchand's not 100%, it's going to be a very tall order for the Bruins to come back against Florida.
You know what? Pasta has kind of taken the team a little bit on his shoulders the last couple games without Marchand in. He's been playing unbelievable. They have to play a four-line, five-man unit, get their chances when they can, because, as you know, Florida is just so scary good, you know, up and down their lineup. I didn't like the Bennett play. I never criticize player safety because it is an extremely difficult job. I think giving him a game would have maybe kept everybody happy. The problem I have, JR, is you've got a guy that just came back in the lineup from Florida, and his first game back in the lineup, he knocks out the captain of his opponent. Like, I have a problem with that. You just knocked out the captain of and the heart and soul of your team.
Well, it's not like Bennett doesn't have a reputation either. He does have a reputation of being a hard nose, in your face, sometimes a little bit overboard type of player, which is why he's so attractive to teams like Florida, and is such a great teammate, because he does do those extra things that really throw some intimidation and toughness into a team.
You know, he did the same thing to Matthew Nyes last year in behind the net in Toronto, and slammed him to the ice, and Matthew Nyes was out for the rest of the series with a concussion. So, you know, I was trying to get some intel today and see if Marshy's coming back. What a huge emotional boost it would be if he could get back in the lineup, but more importantly, he's got to take care of his health. But it should be a great game six, man. Boston, you played in Boston. That's
Yep. Well, they definitely have the leadership. They have the coaching. They need a couple of guys to step up. DeBrusk, I think, has to play some better hockey. I haven't seen him on the score sheet very often. Geeky, I see is playing well. You know, they need Charlie Coyle to step up again and do a little bit more than he's doing. Yeah, there's they're definitely their backs are against the wall, but we saw what Florida did last year. All they need is one break and push it to a game seven, then anything can happen. They do have home ice advantage tonight. You never know if you get to that game seven. What's really impressive to me now moving to the Rangers Carolina is how Carolina's been able to rebound from being down 3-0 and now seems to be the better team going into game six, which has been really impressive for them to continue to stay alive against a team that looked like they were going to roll through this series.
Yeah, you know what? The Rangers had that game in hand the other night, and Carolina, I think they scored four in the third period. It was like, the game was in New York at MSG. It was like the Rangers took their pedal off the gas just for 20 minutes, and it cost them that game and possibly the series. I still have all the confidence. I think New York's goaltending is better than Carolina's. 5-on-5, Carolina has played the Rangers very well. It's when Carolina gets into penalty trouble that the Rangers have been able to put them away. It's going to be a great game. Game six of that is tomorrow night. Listen, game six in Raleigh, that's a tough place to play.
Yeah, it is.
Rock. And, we've got four series right now, and three of them are going into game sixes. I hope all four go seven games, because, as you know, game sevens are the best.
Yeah, let's move to the Western Conference, because I think the four teams that are still in the Western Conference are the teams that should be there. They are the teams that really have dominated the league. If you would ask me in January what teams would be in this situation in terms of the Western group, these are the four teams that I would have said. Dallas obviously finished second in the league. They looked like they couldn't be beaten. Also, really had to battle that first round. I think they got a little bit of a scare in that first round and was able to pull it out. But Vegas was a very tough opponent for Dallas, and to lose the first two games at home and to show that kind of resilience that Dallas did to come back and win that series, even though they lost both games, one and two at home, was incredible for their confidence. So now rolling into Colorado, who I felt was going to win the Stanley Cup, that if you would ask me in November who was going to win the Stanley Cup, I would say Colorado. And now they're starting to dominate that team. As it's shaping up to me, that Dallas team is the cream of the crop of the West. Vancouver had a chance last night to put a stranglehold on Edmonton. They battled back, got that empty net goal to tie it up. That's good. That's a flip of the coin series, Vancouver, Edmonton. I don't know what you think of that, but I watched that game last night. It was fast. It was aggressive. It was some of the best hockey I've seen in a long time in the second round play. What you said in the beginning of the show is absolutely, I can see what you're talking about.
Yeah. Before we go further on that, let's talk about, you talked about Colorado and Dallas. They played tonight in 5, and there's a couple storylines here. One, you've got a kid that just turned 21 yesterday in Wyatt Johnson. He's got 8 or 9 goals. The kid is an absolute stud. And then on the other hand, and that team, for whatever reason, they lost the first two games against Vegas. They lost the first game against Colorado. Colorado looked unbelievable. And then they've won 3 in a row, and we cannot express how big a deal this is that they lost. Colorado lost Valerie Nichushkin. When I saw it, my son saw it and he goes, "Dad, what's stage 3 of?" I go, "I don't even know what stage 3 is." And I read it and I'm like, "Oh my God, it's the same thing as last year." Like, I feel terrible for the guy. He's obviously got a lot of demons, JR, for this to happen in back-to-back playoffs. I've never heard of it before. And
explain to everybody what stage 3 is.
So stage 3 is, stage 2 is he was suspended without pay for, I think, 3 months. Stage three is he obviously failed a drug test. Stage three is he is now suspended with pay and cannot suspended from playing for 6 months. So this is a big deal. You know,
so this is a substance abuse problem that Natushkin really has cannot get the grips on, and it's hurting him, it's hurting his career, and it's hurting his team.
It's hurting his team big time. You know, the guy had nine goals so far in the playoffs. The guy was playing unbelievable. Can you imagine? They found out yesterday, I think yesterday afternoon. Can you imagine Nate MacKinnon and, you know, they're getting ready for game?
I heard they pulled him right out of the game.
No. They hadn't even started the game. It happened. The news broke in the afternoon. But can you imagine you're getting all ready for game four and you're driving to the rink and you get there and all of a sudden you're told, like, talk about deflating for the team.
Yeah.
It's, you know, they must be like, and Jared Bednar summed it out best. He goes, I hope this young man can find peace. And
yep.
That's all anybody wants.
Yep. Well, I will tell you going through what I just went through for the last 7 weeks, I understand. I have empathy for Natushkin. I understand how the brain works. I understand how addiction works. I understand how things that come into life that you cannot control, regardless of what people are telling you. And these things are terrible aspects of life that a lot of people have to deal with. I hope that he can find help. I hope, number one, he admits that he has a problem, because obviously if he's at stage three again, and this has been going on for years, Mr. Natushkin has not been able to admit that he has a problem. And until he does, he is going to wallow in this this hellhole of an addiction, and it's going to hurt him and it's going to hurt his team. And who knows where it leads to if he does not find help for it and nip it in the bud. And I will be the first person to say, I hope he does. I will pray for him. But it is unfortunate because, as we see, it doesn't just affect the person that is going through it. It affects a large variety of people, whether it's family, friends, or in this situation, a team that's trying to do something great together, which is win a Stanley Cup. He hurt their team immensely, not only you know, as a team goes, but also as you know, as a familyhood goes. So
sorry. But you know what? So game five is tonight. I am never gonna count out a team that's got Nate MacKinnon on it, Miko Rantanen, Cale Makar.
You go right down the line with them. I mean, it's endless.
They've got a phenomenal team. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Colorado go. Do I think Dallas will win tonight? Yeah, and they probably should. But it wouldn't surprise me if Colorado won either.
So, yeah. I would expect Cale Makar to have his best game of the playoffs. I think he's been kind of under the gun for his lackluster play, or at least his lack of production. Over the last three games, he'll be the first one to say that he has to be better. And it's kind of wild to say that about a defenseman, that you need a defenseman to play better in order to get this team to have a better chance. I mean, here you have Nate MacKinnon and Rantanen, who should be the key components of the criticism or the guys that do it. But a lot of people are talking more about Cale Makar than they're talking about anybody right now. So it'll be interesting to see how he plays tonight. But I would expect Colorado to have their best game of the year tonight, because that's the team that has won a cup. There are a lot of Stanley Cup pedigree on that team, and I would think that Nate MacKinnon, Rantanen, those guys that have been there are going to have that team revved up and ready to play tonight.
Let's talk about our buddy Tuck and the Edmonton Oilers and Vancouver Canucks. I'm telling you, buddy, this series is you don't want to step away for a minute and go to the kitchen or go to use the bathroom, because this series is intense. It's intense. It's mean. You got Big Z Zadorov on the back end, scaring the shit out of people. McDavid's getting cross-checked in the face. Kane's taking out people. This series has been unbelievable. You got Calvin Pickard playing last night. Calvin Pickard, I'll give Knobloch a lot of credit. He took a lot of balls to say, you know what, I'm going to play Calvin Pickard. Most fans would say, who's Calvin Pickard? He's only played a couple hundred games in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Him. But this series is unbelievable. Whoever comes out of it, it's going to be fantastic. And I'm excited for game five tomorrow night.
You know, it's almost a feel-good story. You know, and I say a feel-good story because Vancouver, who has not been in the playoffs in 13 years, and now they're in the second round playing another Canadian team, and the all of Canada is watching this series, every single one. Rick Tocchet deserves so much credit, and I think should win the Coach of the Year this year for bringing this team to where it is. And I think what they're doing in the playoffs is even more of a reason to have Tocchet be the Coach of the Year with the Jack Adams. But I watched the game last night to watch the resilience of this Vancouver team. I mean, look what they did against Nashville, scoring two empty net goals, down 3-1 or down 2-0, and score two empty net goals to win that game in Nashville, to pretty much crush Nashville's any of their hopes or dreams to win that series. And then again, they pulled a goalie last night, and they score a goal only to get a terrible goal scored against them. The goal that was scored for Bouchard last night was a terrible, terrible goal to let up as a goaltender for Vancouver. Their goaltending let them down last night.
Well, Arthur Chelios has played well for them. And you know what I did?
Yeah, it doesn't matter if he plays well for them last night. Last night, they had an opportunity to come back in a game, score a big goal. That wrist shot, that snapshot, half slapper wrist shot from Bouchard was seen all the way from the point.
Yeah.
And he just whiffed it. And unfortunately, you let up a terrible goal like that with under a minute left in the game to be the difference between a 3-1 series lead to now a 2-2 lead. I don't care what he's done in the beginning of the playoffs or what he's done for now. That is a season changing goal that could have happened for Vancouver. It's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back and rebound from that, and how the goaltender bounces back from that. But that was just devastating for Vancouver, if you ask me, in that stage of the playoffs.
Well, but you know what? Then on the other hand, yeah, it was a weak goal, but Brock Besser's goal was a lucky goal. You know, the puck was going wide. It hit two or three legs and went in the net. So
but that happens. But that's why you can't blame Pickard, right? There's a guy in front of the net. The structure was right. You know, they got guys to the front. They had screens. This is why you throw pucks at the net, because things like that can happen. And you can't blame Pickard for that. On the flip side, on the other side, you have a goaltender who saw a puck that needs to make that save. In a big time situation, and that's what has to happen, and it didn't happen. And you can't tell me that those guys are going back on the plane last night in Vancouver and they're saying, shit, we could be up 3-1 going back into our barn with the opportunity of going to the conference final. But now we're in a big time dogfight against two of the greatest players on the planet Earth right now. You can't tell me that they don't feel that they just lost an unbelievable opportunity.
You know what? Tremendous play late in the game by Evander Kane on the forecheck. He hunted down Hronek. Hronek kind of folded up like a cheap suit. I don't know what he was doing, but Kaner came in. That's why Kaner's good in the playoffs, that physicality. Yeah. You know, he's going toe-to-toe with big Zadorov. And speaking of Zadorov, he's going to be getting a payday in the next few months because he's in the UFA. And we're seeing in the playoffs, he is exactly the type of player you want in the playoffs. He's the type of defenseman
you need
in the playoffs. That physical, big defenseman. Yeah, he's going to make mistakes. Nobody's saying he's a Cale Makar, but guys are scared to go in the corner. Guys are scared to go in the net.
He's the opposite of a Cale Makar, but just as important, because just like you need an offensive defenseman to be able to lug the puck, to be able to control a power play and anchor a power play and make plays like Cale Makar does, You also need a stay-at-home defenseman that's big, strong, mean, and has a presence in front of the net to allow your goaltender to do his job. And I've always loved Zadorov. I've liked him everywhere he's been, whether it's Winnipeg or Buffalo or, you know, Calgary or Calgary. This guy is a beast of a man. He does not care what you think of him. He does his job, and he does his job well. And I agree with you. He is a commodity that is needed on every team and is going to be up for a nice little payday this summer.
Talk needs Elias Pettersson to pick it up. I think he's got 1 point in the last six or seven games. He hasn't done anything at all. You can't keep relying on Brock Besser and JT Miller. Pettersson's the all-star. He's the highest player in the team. He needs to step it up, and Tuck's going to need him if they want to win the series, because you look at Draisaitl and McKinnon or McDavid right now, they know, like, we can, you know, I talked to Evander Kane about a week before the playoffs started, and he said, Pielsey, he goes, our team feels this year more so than we did last year that we are better built and better suited to win the Stanley Cup. And so they know that opportunity is there for them right now. And they're going to, you know, McDavid, man, he's playing out of his mind, as is Draisaitl.
Yeah. And I agree with Evander Kane. I do think that they are poised. I think they are better suited, even though Skinner is kind of slipped a little bit here as of late of his play, but I still think that he could bounce back, and Pickard played a good game. Now they have a little goaltender challenge, which can always help a team in the playoffs.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you, if you're Chris Knobloch, you're going home or going on the road for game five, do you start Stuart Skinner or do you start
Calvin? No, I stay with Pickard. He just won a big hockey game. He played a good game. He did what he needed to do, won a game for the team. You give him another shot. So I would stay with Pickard. Skinner has had the bulk of the work this year. I believe that he lost the starting role, and whether he's going to gain it back or be given it back, I think Pickard deserves a chance to run with something that he just started. And I think the players would like to play for him. You know, I thought it was a good story. It was a good storyline for him, seeing his parents in the stands, being able to hold, you know, escape an adversity of a lucky goal, like you said, a lucky goal, and one that he shouldn't be ashamed of. But I definitely believe that Pickard should go back in, and it's going to be a hell of a series so far.
I agree with you. You can't go to Skinner, because then I'll give you the reason why you can't for our listeners. You go with Skinner in game five after Pickard just won you game four, and Skinner lets in a soft goal right off the bat, right? Lets a soft goal right off the bat. You know, everybody on the bench is going, why didn't we start Pickard? Why didn't, you know?
Yeah.
Been Stuart Skinner's problem in the last four games is he's not making that save that Swayman, Bobrovsky, Ottinger, Shesterkin, these stud goaltenders, he's not making that big save in order to win them a game. So I'm with you 100%. Go with Pickard, and then guess what happens? Maybe Pickard lets in a couple easy ones in game five in the first period. Well, now you can put Skinner in. Now you can put Skinner in and say, here you go, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, you said something about Pettersson. I definitely agree he needs to pick up the game offensively, put more points on the board. You know, this is his first crack at playoffs. You know, he has to get used to the pace and the pressure and the type of hockey that playoffs bring. A lot of these guys, Brock Besser, the same way. These are guys that Brett Besser has been unbelievable at playoffs. You know, Connor Garland, as small of a guy as he is, but a guy that can be effective. Last night was his best game. I mean, he was finally energetic. He finally did something with the puck, had some confidence, but he's been totally invisible because his size in a playoff game against a team the size of Edmonton, he gets lost. Both of them played with more energy last night, But even with the energy, because of the size that they are, the Connor Garland with his stature size and Pettersson because of his physical size. He's a very lean, very small, like not very strong type of player. He's fast and creative and very talented. There's no question. But when you're playing a team like Edmonton that is strong, physical, big, sometimes mean, a Pettersson can get pushed out of a game very easily physically.
100%. And that's why guys like a Dakota Joshua for Vancouver are so important to that lineup. The guy scored 18 goals this year. He didn't even play a full season. Would have had 20. Bounced around the East Coast League. Played a half a dozen games for St. Louis before they traded him to Vancouver. And those, you know, I don't know Joshua's exact size, but I guarantee he's about 6'4", 220.
Big kid. 200. Big kid.
Those are the type of guys you need in the playoffs. So, yeah, it's going to be fun, buddy. It's too bad for Tok. You know, I keep talking about Tok, but that Demko, Thatcher Demko isn't in between the pipes because this is a good hockey team. But you know what?
It really is a good team. And by the way, it's the story, right? It's really the story of the National Hockey League this year.
Yeah.
Nobody saw Vancouver being this competitive or this good to start the season. And they, from day one, have put up points and put up goals and offense consistently all year. And there's a reason why they are in this situation. But again, this is a very, I think, young team. And I say young because their playoff experience is very minimal for a team that has not been in the playoffs for 13 years. A lot of these guys that are on this team have not seen the playoffs.
Yep.
And to lose a game like they did last night in the last minute on a terrible goal, which is a team deflating situation, I don't know how they are going to respond. I'm not saying they're not going to. They have the right coach that's going to send the right message to this team in terms of how they bounce back. But that is a demoralizing mental collapse that could happen in game four last night.
You know what? I want to touch on PK Subban, our buddy PK, made a statement last night, and you know it's the same thing in the Vancouver Edmonton series. The other night the Rangers blew that 2-0 or 1-0 lead at home, where Carolina scored 3 or 4 goals in the third period. I'm getting messages on social media that the reason the Rangers lost is the refs put their whistles away. And I'm like, well, the reason the Rangers lost is you guys played a shitty third period. It had nothing to do with the officials. And last night, the same thing.
That's such BS. That's such BS that you blame the officials for putting the whistles away.
It's been going on in every series. These fans this year are literally, they're crazy. So last night, because there's been some controversies with goaltender interference and so on, as there always is, because it's not a black and white call. And PK said to Bucci last night, John Buccigrass on ESPN, he said, Bucci, I'm not talking about the officials every game. I'm done. I'm not doing this. And I thanked him for it. And then I sent out a tweet. I go, it's easy for the, this is what the media does. The media loves to blame the refereeing, okay? Because what it is, it's a lazy way out for them. Blaming the refs doesn't require any homework at all, okay? Blaming the refs, you could blame the refs every night for whatever fan base you're at. Blaming the refs is the lazy way out for journalists. The hard way is to do your research and watch the game and assess the game properly to figure out why the game was lost. That's the challenge for the media, is quit blaming the refs and quit making it. They always want to make it about the referee.
Spoken exactly the way it should be from a Hall of Fame referee like yourself. Pushing the blame. Let's push the blame someplace else. It's not the stripes' fault. It's not the referee's fault. It's the team's fault. I love that. We are not responsible for anything that happens in the game, us referees. We're actually the only sane ones that are out on the ice here.
No, it is. But the thing is, I have not seen one playoff game. People can say, well, what about the coach's challenge in Boston the other night with Sam Bennett? Well, the referees give their input. That's actually the situation room. Everybody wants to blame the refs. That's actually the situation room. The situation room last night on the goalie interference challenged by Paul Maurice, that's the situation room. The referees give their input, but on goalie interference challenges, the law is laid down by the situation room. They have the final say. So people could say they.
What did you think about that? What did you think about that play? Was that goaltender interference? It looked like he went into the crease and got a little bump, but did he have a chance to regroup and restructure himself?
I think he had a chance to regroup. Listen, let's put ballet skirts on these goalies. Like, seriously, let's you know what? Let's institute the Tom Brady rule where you can't touch the quarterback. Give me a break. There's a lot of shit going on in the game. There's a lot of traffic. There's a lot of bumping and trying to get into position. And what Bobrovsky does really, really, really well, and I give him credit, any contact at all, he drops the stick. He drops the stick because, oh, geez, I'm interfered with. I dropped my stick.
Yeah, every time he gets touched, he becomes a soccer player. Like,
you can relate to this. 1999, the league wanted to, so on social media, night, how come we can't make it black and white? I said, oh, you want to make it black and white? We can make it black and white, like Brian Burke, who I love, when he was head of hockey operations for the NHL, and him and the rules committee brought in a rule. It was the dumbest rule we've ever had. And sorry, Berkey, it's not directed at you, but it was this toe in the crease. And if your foot was in the crease, even though you might have been standing on the other side of the crease away from the play, if your foot was in the crease, they literally would wave off the goal. And so they tried to make it black and white. And what that did, it just created more of a shitstorm because it's not black and white. There is discretion in goalie.
And why is it not black and white? The black and white they tried to do with the foot in the crease came up and bit them right in the ass in the biggest game of the National Hockey League season, and that is the Stanley Cup winning game deciding goal by Brett Hull with Dominic Hasek in Buffalo, where his foot was in the crease and he put the puck in the net. And if they were going to be black and white, they would have had to stop a Stanley Cup celebration to disallow a goal in overtime that would have allowed Buffalo another chance to continue for their Stanley Cup. So again, well said by you, and it can never be black and white, but also you're right. This is a fast game. This is a game that happens like as fast as the eye blinks. There's going to be bumps. There's going to be obstructions. There's going to be accidental contact. To try to decipher everything in this game and to try to control everything in this game is virtually impossible. And there's no one that's going to be outside the blame game. And it'll never be perfect. So just deal with it.
Hey, listen, it just came across. It is kind of important to bring up. Talk, it says, Demko has improved immensely the last 72 hours. So that's an interesting.
What do you go do? Some Chinese therapy, ancient Chinese secret medicines all of a sudden. It's just amazing to me. It's amazing to me how certain people can all of a sudden become so much better within a course of 24 hours and be able to play a game that demands so much agility, so much strength, so much coordination, so much durability, right? But you can't play 24 hours earlier, but all of a sudden 24 hours cures the ability to play a game. To me, it becomes a durability mental decision on a lot of these guys and whether they want to put themselves in those situations to win a hockey game, regardless of injury.
We saw that in the first round. J.R. Austin Matthews left the third period in Toronto because of illness, they said. And supposedly he was sick. And we never really got to the bottom of it. Why, what was wrong? But I'm like, you know, I said on social media, I said, if unless you were violently puking on the bench and you can't go on the ice because you're going to puke on the ice, you better finish that hockey game. So to your point.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I played sick. I played with the flu. I played having, you know, being dehydrated. Michael Jordan, one of his best games we ever saw him play, was in the playoffs when he was literally had to be carried off the court because of dehydration and exhaustion. I'm not going to say anything bad about Austin Matthews, because obviously what the year he had was amazing. Again, him and Marner could not pull it off in the playoffs, could not raise their level of game to a playoff standard, which they are going to be and probably deserve to be criticized and judged for it. But I would hate to sit here and make any accusations that illness, that the pressure gets to them to a certain point to where they're like, I have a reason to get out of here and avoid the criticism and have an excuse for the lack of production. I'm not saying any of them doing that. It's just, you know, just by public, how the public is and seeing what social media does, that there are people that would have that thought in their mind. But it would be too bad to even think of that.
You know what? Speaking of Toronto, it's well documented over the weekend. Craig Berube, I think it was Friday, he flew to Toronto and met with Toronto for 2 days. And then Todd McLellan was in, I think, for just 1 day. So it's pretty well documented throughout the media that Craig Berube and Todd McLellan have been interviewed by the Maple Leafs. If you're Brad Treleving, who do you hire?
I love Todd McLellan. Don't get me wrong. I really, as a person, and I think he's a great coach. But that team needs structure. They need a player. They need a coach that is going to make their players accountable in a lot of different ways. And I think Berube would be an amazing fit in Toronto for what they need. I really think that they should really take a look at whether they are going to keep Mitch Marner or whether they're going to get rid of Mitch Marner and see what they can get for his talents. He does have a high price tag, but again, this guy just refuses to be able to pull it off in the playoffs. I'm going to give Austin Matthews a little bit more of a break because of the season he had, and because he's going to be the one that is going to be targeted more than anyone. I'd keep Austin Matthews before, obviously, over everybody, but Mitch Marner. I think that would be a very logical change and massive change to that team that will really mix up the chemistry.
You know, it's easy to criticize Sheldon Keefe, because when coaches get fired and when teams underachieve, and I've been very critical of him.
He took accountability. I really respect the way he handled the whole situation.
I agree 100%. I respect that a lot. It looks like he may be the front runner in New Jersey. It looks like Tommy Fitzgerald is interested in him. You know, there's a lot. Hey, do you know in the last 12, 14 months, there's been 19 coaching changes? I think Marty St. Louis is either the fourth or the sixth longest tenured coach in the NHL right now, which is unbelievable. So these guys are getting fired. Who's going to replace them? Like, people, one thing I want to say before you get into, you know, who's out there and who's available, is people always say, you know what, why do we regurgitate the same coaches? Why do we regurgitate these guys? If you ask, I saw an interview with Peter Laviolette this year, and Peter said one reason is, for me personally, he said, is because every job I have, I come out of it learning something that I didn't know when I started that contract with that team. Whether it's a second team, third team, fourth team, you learn something from every team you go to, which creates and builds experience for these guys that a guy that's never coached in the NHL doesn't have that wealth of experience. I never looked at it that way, because I'll be honest, I was one of those guys that would say, why are we regurgitating coaches all the time? But Peter's like, the reason that we do is because of the experience that you gain from every stop.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be a couple teams that are going to hope that that theory comes with validation. The Buffalo Sabres with Lindy Ruff, and when Craig Berube gets back into the job, wherever he goes. Because I've been one of those ones that have said, why regurgitate? Why not find new talent? Why not get people from the minors who are used to coaching these young kids that have different mentalities, different toughnesses, that aren't as mentally tough as, say, they were 10 years ago, that know these kids and have taught these kids that style of play for more years and can relate. And maybe that will come, and that will come when the regurgitated coaches decide they want to hang them up. And I'm so happy Travis Green is getting another chance in Ottawa. I think he's going to be perfect in Ottawa.
Seattle's open, JR, and Ronnie Frank is the GM of Seattle, and obviously him and Rod Brind'Amour are extremely tight. And from everything I've read over the past few weeks, Tom Dundon, who owns Top Golf and the Carolina Hurricanes, they haven't been able to come to a contract. Tom Dundon does not like paying guys. And, you know, you would think Rod Brind'Amour, he's born or should retire at Carolina. He's won a team up in Carolina. He is a tremendous coach, tremendous person, loved by the fans there. The last thing that fan base and that team wants is to lose a guy like Rod Brind'Amour and him go to Seattle and get the money that he rightfully deserves.
Yeah, it's a good point. Obviously, I'm a big Rod Brind'Amour fan. You've heard the things that I've said about him, and the way he has his team playing and battling back and believing they can win is a typical Rod Brind'Amour mentality. He is going to be in the league for a long time and is going to be wanted for a long time. His regurgitation years ahead are massive. So I totally agree with you on that. But if you had to pick today, okay, the final, the Stanley Cup final, and who comes out on top, who are your picks right now to kind of wrap up the show?
I would pick Dallas and Florida. As much as I would love to see Connor McDavid in the Stanley Cup finals, I think Dallas is just so deep. I think they're well coached, obviously. Pete DeBoer is now 8-0 in game sevens in his career, which is unbelievable. And I just think Dallas is I think their Jim Neal has done a tremendous job there. They've got structure, they've got scoring, they're just Sagan's playing well. Ben's playing well. The guys that have been there for a while, but then you bring up the Robertsons and Wyatt Johnsons and these guys. And
how about the Pavelskis, the Haskinens are playing great. Fox is playing great. I mean, there's so much to like about Dallas. Ottinger is that goaltender that can win games by himself, and he has shown that before. So I agree with you. I think Dallas has all the tools to get to that final again. And again, what you said, I totally 100% agree. I think Florida and Dallas are going to be the teams that you're going to see battle it out. And it's going to be real interesting to see that, because now we have two Sun Belt teams that are going to be in the Stanley Cup finals, which usually would not be a great, I guess, matchup for any kind of television ratings in terms of the excitement of a hockey Stanley Cup final. But that's what we're looking at.
You know what? First of all, Florida's got to get by Boston, and second of all, the Rangers have to get by Carolina. But can you imagine an Eastern Conference final of Florida and the New York Rangers, buddy? That is must watch TV.
It is. And what's going to be crazy too is, even though how good Florida has been all year, and how much they've done in that fan base situation down in Florida, you're going to have a team who's going to play a possible seven games on the road as Florida, because you know there are going to be more Ranger fans in that building down in Sunrise, Florida, cheering for the Rangers, even though the Florida Panthers have home ice advantage. And that in itself is going to be something that they're going to have to tackle. But obviously, with the leadership that they have with Tkachuk and crew, they can deal with it. But that becomes a very tough series for Florida to get over the Rangers, who I think the only thing that can stop the Rangers right now are the Rangers.
I agree.
Yeah, their own head and their own ability to stay out of the box, their own ability to play 60 minutes. Shesterkin's game is good enough right now to where they should win. But you put any question into the situation, like this game, this series was 3-0. Now it's 3-2. Now it's in question. So that's you don't want to do that. This is what we talked about with Vancouver. Now the Rangers are talking about it. Colorado definitely has that scenario in their thoughts. Boston obviously is trying to battle back, but again, Florida is sitting there saying, "Oh crap, we just wasted an opportunity to kill off the Bruins."
Yeah,
because you know what happened? We did the same thing to them last year with a terrible mishap by the goaltender in Game 5.
Yep.
That allowed the Florida Panthers to score that goal in overtime and then just chipped away and found a way to win. The Bruins can do that. So it's going to be a great finish. It's going to be a great run down to this final. And I'm just so happy that eight teams are there are probably the eight teams that I would want to watch the most.
I agree 100%. Listen, we'll wrap this up, but I'll let you close it out. But I just wanted to say I love you. I'm so glad you're back. I missed you. We'll talk about some more hockey in the next couple of days, but I'm glad you're good and healthy and you look absolutely fantastic.
Thanks. I appreciate it, Tim. It's great to be back with you. And again, we will see everybody on Monday for After the Whistle Weekend Edition. We'll wrap up what happened on the weekend. Thanks to Bet On. Snipes and Stripes. Yeah, Snipes and Stripes right there. Snipes and Stripes Weekend Edition. That's right. That's what we got to do. See, it's been a long time. Got to get the rust off. Got to get the rust off, buddy.
Yeah.
Got to get the rust off, but that's good. That's okay. We're going to do it. We just had a great show, and thanks to Bet Online, Whiskey in the Wild, and again to my great, great friend, Tim Peel. Great job today, and we will see you on Monday.
Sounds good.
Bye.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.